One of my favorite scary films for this month is The Uninvited from 1944. And honestly, rather than scary, it's more creepy and moody, but wonderfully atmospheric. And a lot of that atmosphere has to do with its soundtrack. Starring Ray Milland and Ruth Hussey as brother and sister. It also features a wonderful, wonderful aria called Stella by Starlight. And Stella is played by Gail Russell. She is a innocent country girl seeking her identity, wanting to know where she fits into her world and her family, actually. And the film just captures that beautifully with this aria called Stella by Starlight that it gives to Ray Milland, who plays a composer, to compose for Stella because he has fallen in love with her. Now, honestly, the age disparity between Ray Milland and Gail Russell is a bit, but if you consider that he plays someone who is a jaded city slicker who comes to the country seeking inspiration in a muse and finds it in this young girl, Stella, maybe we can actually believe that. Stella is just radiant and wonderfully played by Gail Russell, who tragically did not have much of a career, but she really, really shines in this. And the music is just totally emotional to begin with. It gives you the creeps when it needs to. It gives you the sense of atmosphere when it needs to. It gives you the sense of foreboding. And it just builds on wonderful art direction that this film has. It truly was one of the first films to take the ghost story seriously, not playing it for laughs or the whole Scooby-Doo motif, oh, just fooling you. It's for real. And it's wonderful in that it takes it seriously. The characters take it seriously, and it has a real impact on their lives. The music and the art direction and just the costumes, the special effects, believe it or not, are just astounding, all add up to a film that has been influential to other horror films as well. And if you watch The Poltergeist from Steven Spielberg, you'll hear at the end a reference to Mimosa. And no spoilers, but that comes from The Uninvited. So really worth seeing, really worth seeking out. I believe it's on DVD in the Criterion Collection. And wonderful film. And oh, please do listen to Stella by Starlight with or without the words that were added on later. I like it without. I like the original version. And see what you think.
Hello, this is Callum Cooper contributing to this podcast episode of In Their Own League, talking about horror movie scores. Now, scores in horror movies for me are some of the most iconic out there. There are so many that, from The Exorcist to Suspiria to so many others, scores in horror movies are some of the greatest out there. And the one that I personally wanted to bring up was Pino Donaggio's 1976 film Carrie. So Carrie is one of my favourite horror movies, so I have a bit of bias in that regard as well. But what I particularly love about Donaggio's score in Carrie is how it captures that duality of vulnerability and horror. Carrie, as a horror film, it's very much kind of about inner turmoil and that inner monster that can come out when we're at our most vulnerable, when we're at our most angry. And that's very much what happens to Carrie. She's put down by the people around her, from her mother to her peers. And when she finally can't take anymore, she finally unleashes all this telekinetic power that she's had stored away. And I feel Donaggio's score really captures that balance very well. It has this piano score that's quite soothing and beautiful in a lot of ways. It would almost be appropriate in a different drama or even in a romance to some extent. But then there's also that uneerie, uncanny feeling to it that suggests something darker underneath the surface. And it really helps to build atmosphere in that film, as well as to kind of highlight like the horror of what we're seeing on screen, but also the tragedy that is the character of Carrie White throughout. And there's one moment in the film in particular that I absolutely love, and it's the bit when Carrie comes home from the prom after wreaking havoc in the prom hall, and she's covered in blood, she's walking through her house, and her mother has set up all these candles and she doesn't know the purpose of this just yet, but it really builds this atmosphere that even though Carrie, in her most vulnerable state, has done something undeniably horrific, she's come back to this place of supreme atmospheric intrigue, and we don't know yet what her mother's going to do about that. We don't know if the intentions behind this are malicious or comforting, but either way, the music captures that duality and gives you an idea that even Carrie's own sense of home is somewhere that isn't safe for her or somewhere that isn't comforting. And I do feel that that the score for this film really captures that beautifully. So that's my contribution. Thank you.
Hello, this is Brian Scuttle. I am a contributing writer to In Their Own League, as well as a film critic at www.sonic-cinema.com. I am also a composer, and for my horror soundtrack that I wanted to shine light on, I chose the soundtrack to 1980's The Shining by Stanley Kubrick. Normally, I am a huge appreciator and fan of original film music, but one of the things that always was singular about Kubrick was the ways in which he used classical music. And most famously in 2001, that is the case, as well as Eyes Wide Shut. But I think in a way, The Shining probably gets not as much credit as it deserves in this realm, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it, because I think there's more going on here than most people kind of realize, and I hope this gives you a chance to, next time you see the movie or if you watch it for the first time, you take a listen to the music and kind of hear what he's doing with it, because I think it's really interesting. We start off with two pieces by Wendy Carlos and Richard Elkind. The opening credits sequence, which is very famous and is a synthesized variation on the Dies Irae, as well as Rocky Mountains. And I think it's kind of significant that both of these, this is the only original music that we hear throughout the film. And they both signify trips to the Overlook Hotel, using synthesized sounds, and in the case of the main title, some really haunting choral howls, almost, that sound completely unsettling and otherworldly, sort of taking us into the heart of darkness, which is going to be the Overlook Hotel throughout the rest of the film. This isn't a lot of music by Carlos and Elkind, but I think it shows the, even because of that, it shows more so how significant original music can be to creating the mood of a film. Once we get to the Overlook Hotel, it is almost exclusively classical music. There are four old-timey type big band pieces. This is Masquerade, Midnight, The Stars and You, It's All Forgotten Now and Home, which come into play during the moments where Jack is really hallucinating the history of the Overlook Hotel as a big, as big parties are going on in building up to that climactic scene where we see him in the July 4th, 1921 photo at the end of the film. But almost exclusively, we have classical music here. And that is where I think The Shining soundtrack has the most of the majority of its power. One of the things I've always been impressed by in watching Kubrick films and listening to Kubrick films is the ways in which he uses classical music as a, not as an alternative to film music, but as a different way of approaching film scoring, because the ways, especially in 2001, that he uses classical music are akin to leitmotifs and classical themes, like the Blue Danube symbolizes is used during space flight. Also, Sprach Zarathustra, The Next Evolution of Mankind, the Requiem by Ligeti is used during the monolith scenes, and you really get a sense of that here too. Ligeti makes another appearance on this one in Lentano, and this is a very ominous sounding piece as well. It's a really dark piece that we hear early on in some of the sequences as the family is getting their bearings at the Overlook Hotel. But we can kind of see Jack starting to go slightly mad. Béla Bartók's music for strings, percussion, and celesta is very much in the same way of that. And it's a more percussive way of signifying dread. But by far the composer who gets the most play on this soundtrack is Krzysztof Penderecki. And this is an interesting choice, because it's a choice that I think has allowed some people to see The Shining as a commentary from Kubrick on the Holocaust. I don't know how much I subscribe to that. You can watch the documentary Room 237 about that and other theories about Kubrick. But one of the things that Kubrick's films will always do is set up conspiracy theories for people who want to see them as art. The Penderecki pieces here are fascinating. There's four main works. There's De Natura Sonoris number 1 and 2, which give us some percussive cues to hang off of as the family's starting to come undone at the Overlook. We have Polymorphia, which is another example of this. And then, but it's also a big part of the ending of the movie, as Jack is completely lost in his madness. And then there's Utrenja, or there's a couple of pieces, excerpts from that piece that really illuminate some of the just out and out terror in the third act of the film. Arguably the most interesting piece that of Penderecki's music that's used is The Awakening of Jacob. And this one in particular, I think, is where people who subscribe to the Holocaust theory of The Shining really point to, because of the fact that it is a tone poem in a lot of ways inspired by the final solution of the Nazis and the Holocaust. The way that Kubrick uses The Awakening of Jacob, it is basically to give musical representation to when Jack and Danny are shining, as well as Dick Halloran as well. Those are some of the moments where it is used, and it's really this film's primary example of Kubrick using classical music as score. And I think it's a fascinating one. There's not an official release of the Shining soundtrack, I'm guessing, because of rights issues, which is unfortunate, because it's well worth seeking out hearing this in context of the rest of the soundtrack. But you can find plenty of homemade compilations and playlists on YouTube and other places for this music, and it's well worth checking out. And I hope I've given you something to think about when it comes to The Shining. It's one of my favorites, and it's also one that several Octobers I've found myself as a composer inspired to write music to inspired by horror movies, whether it's the soundtracks I'm listening to, whether it is the films that I'm watching. And The Shining has been one of those big inspirational things for me over the years. And I hope that even if it doesn't necessarily inspire you to write music, it inspires you to think about film music in a different light. Thank you very much.
This is Morgan, one of the contributing writers at In Their Own League. And in honor of Halloween, I am talking about my favorite film composition from a Halloween movie. And while the film itself is not necessarily outwardly scary, there are some themes and topics discussed in the film that both border on the supernatural and very much grounded in society. I am, of course, talking about the 1998 film Practical Magic, which stars Sandra Bullock, Nicole Kidman, as sisters who come from a long line of witches. Throughout the film, the sisters are kind of at odds with their magical upbringing, and that really comes to a head when Kidman's character finds herself in a domestic violent relationship. The film features composition from Alan Silvestri, who Marvel fans may know as the composer who gave the Avengers their iconic theme. What's interesting about Silvestri's composition in this film is the film itself does not have a very distinct through-line tone, because it really divulges more into the darkness of what these women endure as the film progresses. Obviously, at the beginning of the film, we have a theme that is much lighter, far more whimsical, and really has a spirit of wonder as these women are really introduced, their history, their motivations. And the tones later on through the film are then reflected in the music. The music becomes far more sinister. It is less about the brightness of magic and more about the darkness of man. And it's very interesting the way that those themes really evolve throughout Silvestri's composition. Silvestri's composition is also paired with more modern music. There's a Joni Mitchell song. We have Faith Hill. There's a original song by Stevie Nicks in the film as well. And that type of music paired with the composition by Silvestri really allow this film to have a timeless feeling to it, just by the way that it's able to shift through and use music in such a captivating way. So if you haven't already, this Halloween season, watched Practical Magic, having the original score by Alan Silvestri on in your day-to-day isn't a bad way to spend Halloween season itself.
I'd like to thank Morgan Roberts, Calum Cooper, our wonderful editor Stephen Palmer, and a special shout out to Brian Scuttle, who inspired this month's topic for our podcast. As for me, you know, you can always find me here in the dugout at In Their Own League. Thanks for listening. Till next time.